We're basically here today to discuss our efforts to incorporate DEI principles into the board, better incorporate them, and our effort with Green 2.0 to create a diversity report that showcases, the state of environmental journalism and why it's important to increase our efforts to become more inclusive, to better support journalists of color and from different socioeconomic backgrounds. And places to better represent the issues that are affecting communities most impacted by climate change. As we know, the field of journalism, but especially environmental journalism, is exceptionally white. And this poses a problem because if we're not reflecting the communities that we serve, we're not accurately telling their stories. So, as a way to, I think, beef up our efforts to support people and include more people in SEJ, we think it's important to conduct this report and spend the amount of resources we need in order to get a better assessment of where we are in the industry right now. So now I'm going to pass it to Rico, who's going to provide more of a background on how we got here, how this is also related to our DEI policy, which we had been extensively working on for a while now, and largely, the undertaking it's going to take to complete this report and to secure the funding that we need in order to make that happen. So, Rico, anytime.
Thanks, Nadia. Can everybody hear me okay? Okay, wonderful. Thanks so much for being here, everybody. I really appreciate it. Sorry I couldn't be there with you in Washington State here. Had some family medical issues that precluded me from traveling. But I just wanted to thank everybody for being here again and give a brief background on the DEI report, the proposed DEI report, sort of its importance and its context, I think. As with a lot of things, the context of understanding the context is really essential to understanding its importance. So, my experience as a journalist of color, freelance journalist of color, was such that I, had experienced different, had different experiences relative to the industry. Had other friends of journalists of color who also had experiences relative to the industry, where, just to Nadia's point, there are not a lot of journalists of color in the field. And that's a problem that SEJ has struggled with. That's a problem that environmental journalism itself has struggled with for many years, and is now, over the past few years, has sort of had a reckoning to some extent. I was recruited to join the SEJ board, and a big part of that was the first kind of big idea I brought to SEJ was this very diversity report, this DEI report. It seemed really important to me because if you're going to design solutions, whether you're reporting on climate change or, someone preparing policy on climate change, et cetera, you need to know what the problem is, the problems are. You need to delimit the context. So you need to understand the context you're operating in order to determine if your programs are effective or not. And so the idea behind the report was let's look at what the state of DEI is as such in the field of environmental journalism, so that we can know as SEJ have a sort of a sound basis for creating programs and policies that respond to the actual context, rather than imagining out of the ether what we think might work. And then the point of this too is that it's iterative, meaning that I'm hopeful that we'll have this report, and this will be a part of reports. There will be reports just like this down the line because I think we need to be able to test to test and determine whether or not what we're doing is working. The proof is in the pudding, right? So that's a big part of this report is to delimit the context. To inform SEJ's policies and programs, and then have a baseline to see if what we've done is having a positive impact. So that's the general overall theoretical framework of this report. So As we started developing this, and it kind of came to light in the context of our DEI policy, I don't know if the PowerPoint can be put up. Is that possible?
Yeah, I'll start it.
Thanks, Nadia. And I guess I can't see it, but I can maybe
Okay,
wait, just
we're on the first slide. Just tell me when
first
you're
slide. Okay, cool. I'm just
ready.
gonna pretend like I know where we are.
It's
So
where we started in 2020.
right. So this is a so slide two. Okay, so this PowerPoint was prepared for the board of directors as a sort of historical record to kind of say, hey, look, here are the policy actions SEJ has taken over, a relatively short period of time that kind of demonstrate our commitment to DEI and what specifically that looks like. And on this slide here in 2020, and this is often intertwined with trainings, DEI trainings, strategic planning, et cetera. So I would call attention to the second bullet point here on slide two about SEJ's strategic plan, which makes diversity, equity, inclusion within SEJ and across news media, including reporting on environmental injustice, one of its core values, and commits SEJ to integrating diversity, equity, and inclusion into all its activities. So this report is absolutely at the core of that statement in SEJ's strategic plan. And could you go to the next slide, please, Nadia?
Yes.
So slide three, we have the SEJ values from the strategic plan, diversity, equity, inclusion within SEJ across news media, as I mentioned before, and the second piece being opportunities. We have these values, these opportunities, these visions of what we want things to be. And the thing about a strategic plan is it's kind of a visionary document. So this report is kind of the real world manifestation of these visions, as is this policy, which SEJ board is working through right now. So if you could go to the next slide, please, Nadia. So these are just some examples of how SEJ has committed to DEI, where we put our money where our mouth is, so to speak, with DEI trainings, workshops, et cetera, in 2021, 2021, 2022. Next slide, please. 2023, we did more trainings and workshops and started developing the policy. The board approved the development of a DEI policy with a contractor called Visions, in line with the strategic plan, and then went through a process of determining how to do that, what that DEI policy looks like. So that was 2023. If you could go to the next slide, please, Nadia. So near the end of 2023, the board completed all the board level committees completed meetings with Visions, and we created a document that served as the basis for the proposed DEI policy. It was drafted, and this you'll have to forgive me that this PowerPoint is from that period of time, so it's obviously not September 2023. But then I would have you go, please, Nadia, to the slide eight, please, the second to last.
This one.
So this is sort of ways that SEJ has incorporated DEI into SEJ's culture, which is the point here. The idea being that if SEJ can integrate DEI into its the fibers of its being, so to speak, that everything that we produce will be in the world, and all the impacts we have in the field of environmental journalism will be concomitant with that. So to that end, these are some examples of how SEJ has sought to do that. One in particular I will note is a third bullet point, which SEJ created a future council, and in the creation of that council, made an amendment that specified that future council and its members adhere to SEJ's commitment to DEI. So that's kind of the future council is a fundraising kind of arm, so to speak. That's a big part of what they're there to do. So the big thing we're one of the things we're doing here today is we have in partnership with Green 2.0, Representative Adrian, who's there today, and I'm going to ask to speak here in just a second. We've created this one page report, this one pager, fundraising kind of pitch. And Green 2.0 has raised $25,000, but we need an additional $25,000 to launch the report being created and that sort of thing. So, and I'll have Adrian talk a bit about the cost breakdown in a minute here. But the board of directors for SEJ actually did approve in our budget this year $25,000 toward this effort. I understand there were some reservations about that among some board members, but we are hopeful that the new executive director, Aparna, will be supportive of this effort. She does have the authority to grant these funds. Of course, given the reservations of the board, I assume she'll want to do that in consultation with us. But I guess I'll leave it there. If you could please go back, Nadia, to slide number three, and just leave it up, because I think it's they're sort of helpful meditations to kind of show why this is so important to determining whether or not these efforts that we're these programs that we're creating for SEJ. Hey, Tony, how are you? Good to see you. Hey, Annie, how you doing? I see my crew. I can't see everybody's kind of fuzzy in the background. I can't really tell who's who behind there. But hi, everybody. It's good to see everybody. thanks for coming. I understand there were two elevators you had to take. anyway, so yeah, that's the gist, and the idea behind the report now is to. I hope that we have accessible the one pager that we created with Green 2.0, but I would like to invite Adrian from Green 2.0, who is so kind and generous to attend our conference in support of this. If you could please just give Green 2.0's perspective on this. Thank you.
Want to talk a little bit about advancing growth budget. And so wanted to share that with folks as well. So as you can see on this one pager, it talks about the budget and up to 75,000. They can go through the cost breakdown really quickly. So a big chunk of this cost breakdown is for academic consultants actually design the report and analyze data. That's about and then giving them estimates because there can be a range, right? About 30 to 35,000. And then between 15 to 20,000 on the staff time program that we use to actually collect the data. And then 5 to 10,000 on events, which we choose strategy and digital. And then that last part is about 5 to 10, give or take, scaling scatter up depending on final funding on design and copy editing and final production and support. So we are really excited about the support.
Yeah, and a big part of today's, our convening is basically we need help in being connected to people, potential funders who can assist us in this effort to launch this officially. So if you would like to come up to me or speak to any of our board members here, Tony's also here. Annie's also here. Our former executive director, Megan, is here as well. With any ideas or leads on that, we would greatly appreciate it. But Rico or Adrian, unless you two would like to add anything else, I would like to open it up for questions.
Sounds good to me. Thanks, Nadia. Yeah, hey, Susanna, how are you? Good, thank you.
So I have a few questions about the outcome for Rico, and then about more about the lung for Adrian. So Rico, you mentioned earlier about wanting to be able to show progress, right? So this is the baseline. And then hopefully, we'll, SUJ will rely on this in the future to say, okay, now it's 2 years, now it's 3 years, give comparison to where we were in 2024. What exactly, what progress are you hoping to measure in 3 to 5 years? Because that question will really inform what data you collect. And you need to know that before you decide on the methodology of the survey or inform who you hire to.
Okay, is that a one-part question? One-parter? One-part question? Okay, cool. Well, thanks, Susanna. I think that the projects to measure, I mean, as I kind of mentioned earlier, DEI is kind of as we've come to learn, is it touches every part of the organization of SEJ, so this report, the top level things that we look at, I guess, within SEJ might be the best way to answer that from my perspective, having worked on DEI within SEJ for a couple of years, is member composition, are our programs broadly having an impact? Is the money that we're spending having an impact that's supporting the evolution of DEI or not? And I think that's a really good question, Susanna. And I'm sure I'm not going to provide the specificity you're asking for, but I'm happy to follow up later on this, because I think that the concept overall is such that a lot of the specificity will come once we get this funding and that academic consultant is chosen and then can do this report. And I'll say also, just as a sort of caveat, that we had reached out to another academic consultant directly who has done reports in these fields before, in this sort of area, not environmental journalism, because I don't know if I mentioned this, but there isn't really an environmental state of DEI environmental journalism report that exists really per se. There maybe are sort of tangential ones, the Pew study recently, which had a component to it, which showed that I think 84% of journalists covering energy environment are white. Just sort of these sorts of things. So while I know the specificity, I see that more as a kind of something that occurs at the academic consultation level. And that initial academic we reached out to had quoted us something that was, I believe, over $1 million to do the report. So that may not fully answer your question. I'm happy to follow up with you later, absolutely, given your experience. But do you have any follow-up questions based
Well,
upon that?
just to briefly add to that, it's, I mean, like, to go back to our initial thinking behind this is like, we don't know where we stand in the industry today unless we have a foundation to work off of. So this is the first step to understanding that and to giving newsrooms this information they need to hold them accountable. Also to, I think, better implement this within their organizations. And then for SEJ, we're the largest organization of environmental journalists that exists. So I think it's part of our responsibility to hold ourselves to account in this regard as well. It's
supportive. My question was really designed for you guys to think this through a little bit more, because the question of how many environmental journalists of color out there, we kind of already know, right? It's like less than 5%. Like, does it matter if it's 3%, 7%? We know that they're deeply underrepresented. and that has implications for coverage. I think I'll be thinking through things like my initial question is, so what is progress? Is progress more journals of color in the field? Is it more journals of color to our members of SEC? Is it stronger feelings of belonging and inclusion among those journalists? Is it stronger coverage of issues affecting low income and inner communities of color? Like, what are, I think, building out your outcomes a little bit more specifically will then back away from that and figure out what you want to actually do. So the question.
Speaking out here from Green 2.0's approach, which is not actually like a survey the way we traditionally look at the survey. It's more about a consultation with the organization. So it is well, the first meeting that Rico and I and others had with Green 2.0 was really exciting because we were like, oh, this solves a lot of problems. Have been running into trying to figure out how to use some kind of program. I don't know if you want to maybe share a little more about the actual need.
Sure, yeah. So, you know, we talk in our transparency report really two measures. The first one is that we and we look at both the organization at the individual level and then aggregates. And so we have their data, right? Every year, either the environmental sectors becoming less diverse or more. Secondly, we also talk to practicing organizations, which I would argue is more important for data. Our organization using best practices when it comes to DEI. We have very basic questions. Do you have a people implementation? Do you have an environmental policy? Do you have a DEI? Trying to sort of benchmark, are these things happening yes or no? And then we look at that year after year and say, oh, this is a potential argument. We take a look at our, we have questions about why you are or aren't doing these practices. And organizations do that really, I think, as an internal, like, reflection moment of, okay, looking at the survey, are we answering these questions? Why are this the way it is right now? And allow them the opportunity to make positive people accountable externally, but also look at what's happening internally. And have a better discussion. And then we are there for consultation, resources, and support.
Yeah, and I would just jump in, if that's okay, to kind of get to this a bit more and give a bit more background. So sort of some of the first sort of thoughts of when I would float this to different people at, you know, just in, for example, DEI leaders and, you know, this sort of thing was, the example of the League of Conservation Voters report card sort of idea. So that was the sort of one sort of a suggestion. So I was like, that's a good idea. But I mean, as we kind of developed this more and more and we thought about this, we wanted something more like a partnership and collaboration with these publications that we're going to be including in our report specifically. So it would be less of like there would be an accountability piece, of course, a public sort of disclosure, if you will, you know, of how things are going in this field and at these particular publications. And it would also include, you know, because a lot of these people, they're members of SEJ. So we want to support them in doing what they're doing. So this is about partnering with them, collaborating with them, so that if we help identify opportunities for growth, that we can also design our programming to facilitate and support that within publications, a lot of which in the field of environmental journalism are nonprofits, right? So that's part of it. It's designed to integrate the publications with SEJ from the perspective of just helping them do what they're already, most of them are already trying to do, you know, explicitly by helping SEJ's programs respond more accurately to the needs in the community of environmental journalists.
And to the sort of examples that you provided, I mean, we would say yes to that. Like, we would say, you know, how can this report help create pay equity within newsrooms, or at least more transparency around who is paid what and why? I mean, just speaking from personal experience, you know, at a newsroom that I worked at, There was one person who created a point-based system that they would allocate to journalists that determined their pay. And journalists of color, you know, it's like they were often paid less compared to other colleagues, but they were given a point for their diversity. But how much was that point worth when their same level of experience and so forth meant that they were still paid $10,000 less than other people in the newsroom who had, you know, not that much of a difference in experience or years of experience, but maybe went to a more prestigious university. So it just goes to show like that there's still problems fundamentally within certain organizations, even though they're well-intentioned and want to, I think about these things and may not have the resources to do so. But yeah, like increasing the number of people in leadership positions that are people of color or people from different, who have come from different socioeconomic backgrounds, the number of staff in newsrooms, you know, potential grant opportunities or for travel, especially to events like SEJ, how that could look like, or incentivizing, you know, the right sorts of conversations even to make people care and to dedicate the amount of time to do that. Not every newsroom thinks it's necessary to have something like a DEI committee represented by, you know, diverse members of that organization. So I think, yeah, when it comes to like what those solutions look like in real life, that's not us for to specifically spell out. But many of the things you mentioned are definitely results that we would like to see, in addition to, I think, other ways that newsrooms can think more creatively about what how that would apply specifically to them.
Yeah, and I'll just jump in right there. It made me think about Susanna, your good question about, you know, well, what are the outcomes we want, you know, before we do the report? And to me, it's, and I understand, I've been thinking about scientific research and things like that. A lot of times, I mean, from my perspective, I'd rather not have a predetermined outcome from the start. And from the same perspective of being a journalist, you know, when I go into a story, I may have an idea, but I follow the evidence and the evidence leads me where it leads me. And so I don't want to kind of limit the scope of something by these are the outcomes we want, because we may not know what we actually need to do. We don't, if that makes sense. And I think that this is a big part of this is like determining what are the problems, you know, where are the blockages, you know, to DEI really improving and journalists of color really having an opportunity to flourish in this industry. One problem we face with SEJ, honestly, is in terms of our membership is that there aren't a lot of journalists of color who are on staff in environmental journalism publications, despite all the efforts of some organizations. And so we have to look at, well, if we can only have members who are meet a certain membership requirement, but the field itself comprised of publications is largely comprised in its staff, its leadership, its ownership, non-editorial staff is predominantly white, then our membership pool is very, very limited, right? Now, there are discussions going on within the membership committee to consider a bylaws change to amend our membership policies to make that more inclusive. But that being said, we still face this challenge of, you know, there just aren't a lot of journalists of color in staff positions in environmental journalism publications or in publications who are focusing on environment. So I hope that's also informative.
Thank you, Mika. I agree with everything you say, but it's really important to understand. And for research, survey research, you really need to decide your outcomes before you send the survey. Because you can't have like a survey and say, oh, this has been quite what we expected. We need different types of answers. But this is not matching what we're trying, the question we're trying to answer. Surveys out there, right? So you can't like be iterative in that process. Survey's done, it's going on, it's going on. That's when it comes to survey methodology, it's not a conductive process, which is different than journals. If you want to approach it from a more journalistic perspective, which is more like open-minded, less people can find,
then surveys are the best choice. Something like open and interviews with journalists of color would be a better choice to identify things or issues that are coming up, why people are leaving the field, maybe they feel undervalued at work, you know, whatever the issues may be. So this is why it's really important to match your method with the questions and the help. And I'm happy to talk more about it if you wish, and all of that.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, Susanna. And I'm going to send this one pager, we call it, and it answers some of these questions, I think. Hopefully this can be put up. But basically, the methodology, you know, I think as Adrian talked to, you know, follows this particular methodology. And that felt to us in the development of this as if it was going to provide us a good baseline.
Sort of been tangentially involved with it, and I don't want to push you on the spot, but I wanted to ask you, my sense of kind of what we're trying to do with it is something where, you know, even as journalists, we would want to report it, like an ideal world. We would want to have do the entire universe of journalism and be able to say, this is exactly the demographic makeup of all environmental journalists. But, you know, then we'd be in a situation where we have to spend $1 million that we don't have, and for what? So it seems like in the model that you, the Zinc 2.0 has provided, is something that is a little more nimble and focused, where, like, if I was reporting the story, it would be the difference between trying to find out, get data on every single school district in the country, and on the top one, something like that. So I sort of saw it more along those lines, where, and then, you know, a little closer to a report card than like a scientific survey, and something where over time, you know, the people that either participate, the organizations that either participate or don't, some of them look really good. Providing information. Some of them don't look so good. And but if they want to look better, we're gonna keep asking them every year or periodically however people do it. And I think that is the outcome that we want. Pursuit of all those like inclusion goals is that we want these organizations who are making decisions about who covers environmental issues and what issues they cover. We want them to know that we care about this issue, our members care about it, and we're going to keep coming back and asking them. So I don't know if you have more to say about how that evolves. I think your list of organizations grew over time, but it's also not an exhaustive. You're not dealing with every single organization in the nation or whatever, right?
The answer is right. It's a few ways. I don't even know that I have that much to ask, but the things we want to specifically go with today are focusing on the 40 largest environmental organizations. That's very purposeful to get an idea of who is going to report and who has the most staff within the environmental sector. And we do the same on the foundation side. The 50 largest foundations giving the most funds to environmental causes. We have grown throughout the last couple of years a small network as well, very specifically chosen as well. So I think we leverage your goal, right? We don't donate every environmental organization in the state. You get a family, and then through that, we're able to forward and make some of them. We want to participate in their work. You're able to opt out, right? If they don't want to be a part of the support, that says something about maybe the way that you're approaching this work as well. And organizations, frankly, do think about, like, are we actually doing DEI best practices effectively? When we look at this report, it provides them really accountability for sure. We had a survey year after year. And it is to some extent, right, so that we participate in the transparency report, we're doing the progress we're getting there. And then I think actually, Rico can speak to this because we talked about this. There is a very targeted and specific list of newsrooms that we want to start with when it comes to this report, in sort of the same way that the transparency report is done.
And have you had, can I just ask real quick, have you had organizations that run DL or kind of
like achievement early on, it's like changing over time. Did you see that measure of progress?
Yeah, so we've seen that in the organizations who decided not to opt in for a very long time and who were pressured by staff through their own staff, frankly, that's the biggest source in their own staff telling them, if you want to understand why you won't be able to support. And they probably have a little bit of even more so more than that. And then we've seen that other end of organizations looking at the results and saying, we don't like the way this looks. Like, this is not a great representation of who we are and who we want to be. And so they to follow things about what they're doing to make these changes. And then they actually come to us because we do that for like, 2020, 2021, we did it to me, and we are very proud of this. So, yes.
Yeah, and I think just from my perspective too, I think that to that really good point you made, Tony and Andrew's like a very good response. I think that it's about improving, building relationships, and also empowering staff members. I've heard some very troubling and disturbing stories from people of color, journalists of color, from who are staff members at publications, regarding their treatment within those publications. And they're feeling alone. And gosh, it's hard enough to get into positions like that and to have an added layer of having to experience racism, prejudice, tokenization is just not something that's acceptable. And so, from my perspective on the board of SEJ, I think that that's something that I'm very committed to. And I think this report is also something that, say you have a staff member at a publication that says, hey, look, I've been saying this for 6 months, here's the data. It's hard to ignore the evidence, So I think that's something that's also designed to do or conceived of it, with the hope that it will help journalists of color, freelancers and staff members to have the data they need to ask for the necessary reforms regarding DEI within their within the publications they work for, both as employees and as contractors.
Yeah.
I would love to see a future of the MSJ where you can be here for the industry to make this our collective future and to make this something that we're all thinking about all the time, internalizing our powers, our stories, and in the space we're working. And so someone said earlier, you can walk the talk, and so I want to do this for the fellow board members and legacy members of this field and organization that this is a real problem. There's no resistance to change and growth. It's a real consequence for our public and for business. love that company, I love to have an ethics. That's really important to me. You know, it may be in this sort of thing, you know, I just don't, in my experience, that's not their problem.
Yes.
Does anybody have any questions?
Yeah, I mean, I personally, as a Latina, have experienced and felt many of those things. And sometimes we're not given the ability to openly speak about that or have those conversations with our editors or with our supervisors because of fear of retaliation or fear that it's not welcome or fear that, you know, we won't be taken seriously. So I think this is in a way a good first step to encourage that and give people the confidence that it's okay to do that. I just want to say that. Yes.
While I see that happen, you know, all these of color that I used to be able to
Well, I would say that, you know, SEJ with new board has elected a really powerful leader in Carla Mendez, who's now leading the DEI committee, and she's very committed to expanding SEJ internationally. I certainly don't see this report, as I said before, I think this report is a kind of first attempt with, I hope, many more to come. And I see those reports expanding internationally as well. I think that that's something that SEJ is looking toward in the future. You know, while we stay robust, perhaps more domestically and within the hemisphere, creating possibilities, at least providing frameworks in this context for perhaps our international diversity fellows, who can then take these things back to their respective countries and organizations and publications, and then to find ways to support them too. So I think, we are happy, SEJ. I'm happy as SEJ board member to assist you in your efforts in the UK, share knowledge, support as much as I possibly can. And I don't see any reason why an organization or a publication in the UK or any other country shouldn't or can't participate in this report. So I would say that is something to consider too. For example, if you have at your publication, the opportunity to say, hey, there's this report, would this be something that we could do? I think it's important, et cetera. I don't see any reason why we should limit this at the boundaries of nation states.
Yeah. And I'm also a member of National Writers Union Masculine Solidarity Project. And yeah, I guess I came in a little late, so I'm sorry if you already talked about that stuff, but I just want to make a little pitch for making sure freelancers are included and organizations that only support freelancers are included in this project. You know, we've been doing some of our own research around rates for freelancers and are about to launch a campaign to encourage freelancers to report rates to our rate sharing database so that in a year from now we can share some data with organizations like SEJ and certainly organizations that work with freelancers. But what our early data shows is that rates are all over the place. Like at any singular organization, someone might be making half of what someone else is making, and there's no clear reason why that happens. The good rates are not actually good. They're dramatically lower than the minimum rates for that are, you know, bargained out in union contracts too. So, you know, we some of this early research has also shown that some of the working journalists are freelancers. That was before 20,000 people were laid off in the last, I don't know if it was year or 2 months. So I just think it's really critical to include freelance, thinking about freelance labor conditions in any survey. And, you know, I think Freelance Solidarity Project, we can happy to work with you guys, however it makes sense. We have some principles for working with freelancers that could be a reference point for this. And we definitely appreciate that we can support in getting people to do a lot of survey.
Yeah, thanks. I just want to point out that I'm a freelancer, so I'm well acquainted with the ins and outs of the that context. And absolutely interested in that as well. I just want to point out about my idea about going international. I think that's probably something that I may have been too hasty to commit to in this report. I understand that there can be some issues with skewing data and that sort of thing, but I'm certainly open to it, and I'm not discounting it out of hand right now, but just want to add that caveat.
And I think to your point about also, you know, freelancers, whether someone chooses to be a freelancer because that's more convenient for them or they like it, or whether someone's been laid off and, you know, that's the option they have available to them at the moment to stay in the industry. You know, freelancers shouldn't be treated like the second class citizens of journalism. I think knowing the volatility of journalism at times, many of us have either been laid off or have had other circumstances that have made it easier for us with our flexibility to be a freelancer. And so it's important to recognize those same issues exist among that pool of journalists when it comes to pay equity, when it comes to how we're treated, when it comes to, you know, relationships with the editors that we work with across the board. So I think that's a really great point that you made. Any other questions? Or commentary?
On this, there are fewer. I can't tell you that there's one, you know, SEJ for Europe. There isn't as far divided up by country. But there are some support organizations that are really interested in working on this. One, we have, you know, the pilot underway. Say, hey, this is something you can do in your country or there's a path for that. For the folks that really know their context, you know.
And I just wanted to say, you know, first of all, I just wanted to acknowledge some folks in the room there that have been super, super helpful, unbelievable. And I wish I was there. It's killing me. Like, I want to give people hugs right now. but everybody in the room, you guys know who you are, who have been just unbelievable partners in this report and other DEI efforts in SEJ. I'm just so grateful that you're there. You know who you are. I would also just say, for those of you in the room who may have connections with funders, if you're in positions, wherever you are, freelancer, staff writer, executive director, editor, senior management, et cetera, please advocate for this report on our behalf with our blessing, and help us raise the funds that we need to get it done. Because I think in the end, everybody's going to benefit from this. This shouldn't be something that's perceived as a threat. This is something that's meant to uplift everybody. You know, a rising water raises all ships, truly. So I really believe that this is only going to help the field of environmental journalism evolve in more ways than we can even imagine right now. And I would just implore you to allow yourself to imagine the possibilities that can come as a result of this. So thank you so much for coming today. I deeply appreciate your attendance, and I hope to see you all at some point in the future.
That's great.
Thank you, Susanna.
Can talk to Green 2.0 about that as well. We still have about 10 minutes if anybody else would like to chime in or say anything. Otherwise, we can also wrap up.
Okay, I would ask too, if anybody, I'll ask a specific question, maybe some can respond. People have brought these things up along the way, but I think it's a good opportunity to ask people if they've had experiences where, you know, that fit within like DEI challenges, let's say, within their careers, that they might offer just for our information, so that we can take that and understand it better to shape this report toward, you know, addressing real world problems.
Very minor thing, sorry. My first job was in a really small newsroom, and by far, probably the only kind of person that ever worked at that newspaper. But I think this was more like a question of cultural competency, in that I was doing reporting on something kind of mission related, and mission as in related to film stuff. And I was talking to my editor, and I was if we're gonna ethically report on this, I think we need to add some diverse voices about not just these are white people from rural North Carolina who are coming to Latin American countries and building things for their teenagers about building certifications. And he was really against that. It was kind of this moment where I studied Latin American studies, my family is come all from Latin American countries, and I'm we are at I'm a Hispanic person who's telling you from communities that I've been part of, and from also my professional background in studies, that this is an aspect of diversity that we need to talk about within our reporting process and being kind of dismissed. And so not necessarily a challenge in terms of progressing in my career, but more about what does it mean to what is the value of having diverse reporters in your newsroom, because I feel that's a quintessential moment where it's really great we have somebody with this alternative cultural competency that I call. So I think that's one example.
I think that's a really helpful example, and I thank you for sharing it. And that's absolutely the kind of thing we're looking to address, you know, in these stories, anecdotal and otherwise, and data helps us to kind of SEJ use its resources and influence to help facilitate these things. Another thing that may be beneficial or interesting to people that SEJ is sort of piloting right now is by Amelia Ascari. We did a small workshop in Boise, and I understand she's doing another one now, is to help, you know, independent news startups. And I would say too, not for everybody, but for some, if you find yourself, banging your head against the wall to no avail, to publish really important stories. I mean, the resources are becoming available to start new publications, independent publications, perhaps a bit more nimble, innovative, et cetera, than existing publications. And so I would, you know, offer that as a kind of possibility. But if others have questions about anything else, you know, please happy to hear that or feedback.
Did you have something you wanted to share?
Sure. I'm sorry, I got here late. We tried every building. My name is Greg Hansen. I'm the publisher. And was just thinking a little bit about your comments about the UK and the difference between sort of the way that folks, executive suite, look at these issues versus folks in the newsroom. And I will just say that a lot of it for me in my work has been convincing other people in business leadership position that this work is actually central to the sustainability, financial sustainability of organizations like mine. It's not only the right things, but it is also the thing that is going to be relevant. I'll just add that one struggle for a smaller organization like mine is it's a simple financial one. I think in the U.S. There has been a real recognition in the last decade or so that, and we've had a really hard time hanging on to the struggle. They learn to create, they do great work, they get snapped up by large companies. So well, I think we're just in a process, and that's an important role to play, right? We're proud of that role. It's kind of stopping a waypoint, a launcher of careers, but we're at a point with my organization of looking at what our role is, how, you know, in sort of advancing careers of journalists of color. Indigenous journalists and potentially how can we hang on to folks? We have great staff retention numbers for our white employees. It's journalists of color. There's a lot to that.
Yeah, I mean, thanks, Greg. That's a really super helpful point. I think that, and as I mentioned earlier, this report is absolutely designed to, you know, help publications like HCN to be able to answer that question. You know, I think this report seeks to basically do exactly what you're asking for, to determine what may be, you know, the barriers for retention, and then, you know, help you improve on that. I mean, that's absolutely the spirit of this. So I'm certainly hopeful that this report will help organizations like yours, absolutely, and specifically that way.
Well, that's a really big question that that's something that you might have in your really demoralizing, right? It's going to become.
Yeah, I'm really sorry to hear that you're having that experience. I think that, although I certainly can't do anything about that policy stuff, perhaps, I certainly want to just say that one thing I want SDJ to become in terms of, from a DEI perspective, is a sort of harbor, a safe haven for journalists of color, environmental journalists of color, where we can talk and speak freely and feel supported. That's so important when you're facing these difficult matters, not to feel isolated and alone. So I just hope you feel welcomed here, and feel free to reach out to me personally. If I can help in any way, don't hesitate. I'm sure my fellow board members would agree with that.
I believe you had a question and then, or comment, and then we'll close with you since we are already about 5 minutes out.
Problems can arise that have set contact. And you know, I mean, when you say, like, oh, we want these stories, we want these stories, but they might not be sure about it.
Thank you. Would you like to comment?
Yes. Well, I requested examples for some experience. I'll just add mine as well.
Could you introduce yourself?
I'm Lauren. I write for the Chesapeake Bay Journal. And this story comes from when I was at a radio station in Missouri, and I was covering a trans rights rally at the university. And they were rallying against a state bill that was trying to prohibit, you know, trans students from competing in athletics. It's that type of stuff that was hitting Missouri. And the senator proposing the bill said, like, very transphobic stuff.
And I am want to include that in the story because I thought it would really be harmful to our readers and just push more transphobic rhetoric. And my news director really thought we should include something from the senator to feeding into that both-sidism type deal. Luckily, a lot of the newsroom was actually queer, so including myself, and the people right below the news director agreed with me about that. And so luckily, we didn't, I mean, we talked about the bill and stuff, but we didn't include transphobic language. So I'm very grateful that happened. And so I think that points to what you said about it's really important having leadership included and trying to kind of just change leadership in that way. So, yes.
Thank you for sharing. Well, we're at the, you know, at the time. So thank you so much for everyone who came and for sharing your experiences, your questions. We really appreciate you showing up, all of this feedback we've gotten, and, you know, we're excited to launch this effort, and we really just appreciate your time. If you have any questions or follow up or just want to come and introduce yourself, again, I'm Nadia Lopez. I'm on the board, and I'm also on the DEI committee. We have a couple other fellow board members here as well, and, you know, our doors is always open. So thank you.